Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Money is an important part of our economy, an important part of everyday life. The ability to have access to money for investment purposes is an important one, whether in business or personal use. But where do you go when you need money? Now, I find this question always interesting. It's one that I'm always asking entrepreneurs, business leaders, professionals, family members, friends. I think sometimes it bugs them that I ask them that question, but it is an important one to answer. Where do you go when you need money for your business or personally? Is it the bank of mom and dad and family? Maybe the traditional banking systems here in Canada, or maybe your credit union? Maybe you're part of the online banking world where everything is now virtual. You wear the orange card and are proud to be a virtual banking connoisseur. You might even be one of those people who have used crowdsourcing to generate funds because traditional approaches haven't worked. It is likely you have needed to secure financing for something in your life, in your business. Maybe it's a new car, maybe it's a house, maybe it's a business overall. Maybe to pay back or off debt or make an investment into something else. The other day I came across a very interesting article on peer-to-peer lending in Canada. It turns out it's an approach for borrowers in need of cash for any number of reasons. In Canada, peer-to-peer lending is still considered relatively new and can help you reach your financial goals. As I read some of the articles, one of them suggested that in Canada, or to think of peer-to-peer lending as your financial buddy system on steroids. Regular people have invested money so that people like us, you and me, can finance with less hassle and costs. So I thought to myself, who do I know is knowledgeable about peer-to-peer banking in Canada? And it turns out my friend Ben, president of Charter Management Group, Inc., is at hand for the task. Ben, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Richard. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. Ben, to sort of connect you with our audience a little bit, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm basically a farm boy, Richard. Some people look at me and they say, I can tell. We grew up on a farm just near the U.S.-Canadian border.
Okay.
And I still have 20 acres down there right on the highway, prime property.
Oh, right on.
So if I ever wanted to, I could conceptually buy a combine and a tractor and a rake or whatever, harrow, and get to work.
And go back to farming.
Yeah. So,
since
fall
you
back.
Grew up that way. Your business, Charter Management Group, has been around for how long?
Oh, man, I hate to think, but I mean, really, it's at least 30 years.
Yeah, I was thinking that, right? Yeah. I thought I saw somewhere like 1983 or 87, 85. Would that be about right?
That sounds very accurate.
87. Yeah. Even I'm working the numbers here. And that, given your organization, what kind of work have you guys been involved in over the years?
Well, we do three things.
Okay.
Essentially, one is, first of all, we're executive recruiters. And then we are also corporate trainers. And we do a little bit of divestiture, a fair amount of divestiture, a little bit of venture capital. Although venture capital, I'm delegating that to other people right now. It's getting too complicated.
Besides, you're busy. I'm curious as to when you talk about venture capital or divestitures, did I get that pronounced correctly? What is that? Let's define that a little bit.
Selling businesses. You know,
okay.
I got a call from the Royal Bank here about 4 years ago. And they said, we're really interested in what you're doing because we have determined that there will be a total of 4,000 businesses that will be selling. These are like small MAPA operation businesses. And we'd like to support you.
Okay. Yeah. So then the opportunity is to actually meet with those businesses or some of them and to be a source for the Royal Bank or any banking institution to help succeed these businesses to either other people or transition them. How?
Exactly. Well, first of all, you need to have a seller and you need to have a buyer.
Yeah.
And somewhere, somehow, there's a fair amount of finances that come. We usually start with a financial statement of the past, five, sometimes 3 to 5, 7 years.
Yeah.
And the buyers are very astute, Richard. They know exactly what they're buying. The sellers, they're a bit of a pie in the sky. They want everything plus the moon.
For their company, because it's probably blood, sweat, and tears have gone into it.
Well, sure. And now it's time to get paid for all that.
Yeah, yeah. And then what is the value of that overall? That's an interesting aspect to your business. I've always thought that was very fascinating to actually having clients come in or working with other companies and helping them sort of succeed their business into other spaces.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, for me, it was a natural transition because I was doing executive recruitment.
Yes.
And some of the guys that would come in, Richard, they didn't really want a job. They wanted to run a business or support a business growth or do something almost like a consultant because mm-hmm. their career had been, they were, you know, maybe 55 to 45, 55, 65 years of age. And they were looking for more.
Yeah, looking to transition into something else.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when a company sells a business, they says, oh, I'm just going to retire and travel the world. Well, I've seen that so many times. They're gone for maybe a year, and then they're back in the office saying, you got anything for me?
Yeah, what's next? That's right. Yeah, that's interesting you would actually say that because my wife and I have the conversation about retiring someday. And like most Canadians, right? I mean, fair is fair. And she's the retiring kind, okay? But I'm not. I get it. When somebody says they're just going to go on to the next big thing, the next adventure, I'm all hands on deck for that. I mean, I'm always interested. What is that thing going to be? You know. Yeah. So maybe you can provide some stories on that.
Well, stories galore, man. But definitely, people sometimes say to me, "Well, Ben, are you retired yet?" And I says, "Well, heck no, man. I'm having more fun than I ever had before. This is the best time. This is nothing has ever been so exciting as what we're doing right now at this time. And we're doing this not just for Winnipeggers, Manitobans, but all across Canada and also beyond that, worldwide. So this is very exciting.
And international, some of the things you're doing. I know that I opened up talking a little bit about banking or finance. And just with various conversations you and I have had over the years, so I knew a little bit about what you were doing. What are your thoughts on the I'm going to ask a very big macro question. What are your thoughts on the financial industry right now related to business? It's a pretty big question.
A huge question. You know, when Trump took office about a year ago, one of the first things he did, he called a special group of advisors and asked them, what can they expect for the next year? And they wrote him a long
list
of things, and actually they published a book you can buy of all the things they told him. But one of the things in there were, you will experience, they told him, this year people will go to the bank and it's their money and they will not be able to get it out.
Okay.
It will be a problem. And so, you know, people don't think in those terms. It's my money. I can get it whenever I want. But times are changing. Now, fortunately, because of Trump's way of changing the economy in the U.S. and the stock market being up, those things didn't actually happen. Although I must tell you one thing. We traveled down. I'm a pilot, so we fly to go down to Oshkosh, the world's biggest air show. And we tried to buy gas for the motorhome. And I said, well, only use debit on this trip.
Yeah.
Well, you can't just only use debit.
You know, with that thought in mind, why don't we come back and talk about the challenges within the financial environment? So we'll kick off with that, why you can't only use debit, and then what are some of the changes that are happening? This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Ben, president of Charter Management Group. Sorry, I got it a little backwards there. Ben, just before the break, I was having a little bit of fun with you talking about your trip down to the U.S. of A. and not being able to use your debit card. And now you gave me a little bit of a cliffhanger there. I need to understand why you couldn't use your debit card. What was going on there? To get gas, remember?
Yeah, we were getting gas and they wouldn't take your credit card. And you're out of gas, man. You got to have some... need some fuel to get to the next point. So we drove around until we found one particular station that would accept the Canadian debit cards. Eventually, however, we resorted to credit because this is going to be too big of an issue having to try and find only one particular station every time.
You needed gas. Yeah. I had a business friend of mine who travels to the U.S. Frequently, and I recall a year ago, my wife and I were going down to California to get out of the winter of Manitoba, and that was the first advice he gave to me, too. He said, so make sure that you have cash, right, and that you have everything lined up, because if you had to use your PIN number or anything at the gas pumps, you're not going to be able to pay for your gas. So I had to make sure I actually had cash on me. I don't know about you, but I'm like most people have transitioned into the more modern times of how we do transactions. It's debit and credit card. You know, so, and that's what we're used to.
Well, absolutely. And now, one of our operations, which has already started in Toronto, we have three areas. We have one in Toronto, two in Winnipeg. And then the head office, or really the IP office, is in Montreal. But in the Toronto one, they have a new system, Richard. You have a credit card, but it's your bank account, your entire bank account. Now, you can have it either as a card in your wallet, and it's your money, and it'll work every time, wherever you go. The interesting thing is you go into the U.S., and it's in U.S. currency. You come into Canada, and it's Canadian currency. Or you go to India, it's in their currency. And you can have it as a wallet in your on your cell phone or as a card in your wallet, either way.
Oh, okay. So that's a bit of a change, because I know during the break I was saying it would be really great to talk about the changes that are happening within, and I know it's a bit of a macro question, the financial industry overall. And I know we don't really want to get in heavy into debit and credit and all of that stuff, but you're really talking about a change in a system. Is that what you're making reference to? And is there something we could call that?
Yes, very perceptive, Richard. And it is, it's a payment system.
Okay.
And it works a bit differently than people are accustomed to, but it's catching on like wildfire. It's certainly supported, and it's interlinked with both Visa and MasterCard, and also people's credit and some other ones in the future. So it is just the answer for people. You can travel and work, get around anywhere you want with such comfort and knowledge and peace of mind, because what you have is yours. And if you were concerned about somebody ever robbing you, you want to put all your money into the bank. You don't trust the bank. You put all your money into your pillow instead of the bank. Well, you don't need to do that anymore. You've got a card.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who'd put all their money back into a pillowcase anymore. I don't even know how you'd go about doing that anymore. It's amazing what you've sort of forgotten, right?
It would be a challenge.
It would be a challenge. I don't even know if the bank would even give you your money, you know? So that could be a case. Now, are we talking about peer-to-peer banking here, or are we talking about something else? Because I need to sort of define what this is.
Yes, you're actually...
Am I jumping ahead? Because I know we have traditional banks, and then we have near banks or credit unions, and then, you know, there's all sorts of different options. So there's one appearing on the scene in Canada that does exist in other places in the world already. So I just want to see what exactly, let's call it something. You know, what are we talking about?
It is a payment system.
Okay.
And it complements peer-to-peer.
Okay.
Now, the peer-to-peer that I'm talking about is like none other. This is the operation that we have, and this is all a part of my recruiting work, you know, because that's how it got started. I think there's a story there in itself, but
well, we should go into that story. Let's get the backstory first, then we can explain what it is. So we're going to be. First of all, what is peer-to-peer banking? Let's go there. So let's define that.
Okay. Suppose Richard, you are looking for. You want to start an operation, or you need some money for whatever, and or you're a grandfather, and you want to help your grandchild out, or something of this nature. If you go to the typical banks, then you may have an uphill battle, especially starting a business, because they find it difficult without collateral, any kind of track record or history, to give you a pile of cash. Whereas if you go to a peer-to-peer bank, that's exactly what they do. Or suppose that you have made a loan and you can't repay it and the bank wants to foreclose. You come to a peer-to-peer bank because there's your solution. You get and you can control it to a large extent, but it's also like this. You go onto the website. You put down exactly the amount of money you want and for what purpose, and it can be small amounts or it can be in the millions or even beyond that. So then people who see this, who have money, they want to do something other than just have their money sitting in the bank, or they're just looking around for an opportunity. They extend a loan to you. You put down the terms and the conditions, and they say yes, or they may want to negotiate with you a bit, and it's like overnight. It's there. It's done. It's terrific.
So it's another way to access capital.
Yes.
Money that you need. Okay. So just before, so is there a limitation as to what you generally can borrow? There's a couple of ways I want to go with this, but I just want to find out if there's a limitation in terms of this type of system.
You know, our regulatory governors and people who make the rules, they set down some limitations. So of course, there's a limit to the amount of interest, and there's a limit to the amount of money, although there are ways in which you can surpass that. So let me tell you, I wrote a check because I was supporting the operation as a recruiter, and it was in the vicinity of $500 million. So you tell me you need any more than that?
$500 million is a lot of ka-ching. I think a lot of people would be shocked to write a check for that size. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I think we'll talk a little bit more about peer-to-peer banking and how it can be used, but we'll also get into the backstory a little bit.
I should correct. It wasn't a check. It was actually a note.
Yeah. We'll explain the difference. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with my new friend, Ben, and we're now talking about a little bit about finance, actually, peer-to-peer lending. Now, Ben, you mentioned in the last segment that there's a bit of a backstory. So I got you to define a little bit what and explain what peer-to-peer lending is. But what's the backstory to P2P environments?
Well, you know, you ask yourself, how do you get into these kinds of situations?
Yeah, how did you get into this? That's actually my question.
Well, as a recruiter, of course, we've done various things. And if you were to ask the average competitive recruiter who's the charter management group, we fly under the radar. So they probably wouldn't know much about us. They'll say, well, they don't do much. But let me tell you something. We do a lot.
Yeah.
And like we've opened up a brand new copper mine in Indonesia some time ago. And we had started a new tire factory in France, you know, and various things of that nature.
Yeah, you do lots of stuff. I mean, I've often looked at your company and I've Googled it, right? And I find that you're one of those Winnipeg companies that are very understated, yet having international reach. It's amazing.
It is interesting. I mean, we get to travel all of Europe, as I mentioned earlier, just in our conversation and so on, because clients come along and they have ideas and they want you to do things. And that's what happened here. Two property developers asked me to call a meeting. So we're having lunch. And as they're conversing, one of them says, well, the reason for the meeting, first of all, was that they wanted to work with the administrative economic benefits of working together. And in the process, one says to the other, you know, we buy this property. And one of them has, I think, 1,000 acres in Winnipeg or thereabouts, and also Brandon. The other one had more property than that in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and so on. And they said, what we really need is we need to own a bank. We should buy a bank. And I said, oh, you want a bank? And he said, yes. I says, I'll get you a bank. I'm a recruiter. He says, what? You're going to get us a bank?
Yeah.
I said, yes, I will.
Okay.
And so I went to work. I had actually, a couple of years before that, had a call from a guy in BC who wanted to start a bank in China. And he says, I have the patent and I have the plan because China doesn't have a national bank. So he went with an entourage down there. And we had actually set up a different route for him to go, but he found something. And so I called him and I says, hey, there's a couple of guys here want to have a bank. So now Winnipeg had the beginning. So we found some investors, put some money together. And here, Winnipeg is going to be the big, big benefactor of opportunity for people to borrow, lend, and advance their businesses, their personal lives in more ways than you can ever think of. It is huge. Not only that, Hydro at the annual convention or their annual presentation with the chamber said, we're looking for big money. So we have actually got the solution for them. Also, City of Winnipeg. In all likelihood, because they're looking for infrastructure money, and the provincial government is looking for opportunities to invest in mining and things. So here's the answer for that. But it's more than that. It's for the average person, the homeowner that is looking for either to put an addition on the home or something of that nature.
So is it fair enough to say that this is a new bank? I'm hesitating using the word new bank or new way of using money, right? So maybe you could explain it a little bit more. What do you mean that we're going to have a new bank here in Winnipeg and it's going to be the center of all things, which is great, by the way.
Well, there's the big thing, you know, Richard, it's actually not a bank.
Yeah.
And fintech, it's called peer-to-peer banking. I don't know, for some reason in the world, that's the name it got dubbed. But you know what it is? It's a financial technology that works like a bank, but you don't actually bank your money. It's like you don't put your money into here to bank. It's a transaction.
Okay.
It's a lending. So we're always looking for two people, lenders and borrowers.
Okay.
And the sooner we can get lenders and borrowers working together and interacting on our website, the sooner people are going to be off and free and to do the things they want. And you and I have to get together because there's a lot of fun we want to have.
Within that. So then it's very similar, I guess, to traditional banks where you can actually go online and do certain things. But in this case here, it's really more of a lender-borrower type of scenario.
It is. Traditional banks have a lot of qualifications.
Yes.
You know what's neat about this? You actually don't have to sign any paper. It's almost at the point where it's just a transaction, and it scans in your information, or you tell it the information, and it's done. It's seamless. It takes the frustration out of banking. That's the real opportunity.
What about situations like, so sounds fascinating. So my question would be then, what are the challenges with it? You know, with situations where people put money up that other people can borrow, what if the situation is that somebody can't pay back the person that they borrow the money from? I mean, that to me just sounds like a natural challenge that could be something that could unfold.
Well, there are several safeguards, of course. First of all, to be a peer-to-peer operation takes about a year to get all the qualifications, the certifications, and all the legalities set up, because we have all the qualifications. My client has all the qualifications of a major chartered bank, the best of them, the biggest, all those same similar qualifications as a chartered bank, but won't ever be a chartered bank.
They won't be regulated like that. But so go further. What's the challenge with all of that?
You asked about security. Of loan and so on.
Yeah.
So the loans can be either equity or just a plain loan.
Okay, so equity would be I own my house and I want to borrow from the assets that I have, the value, a percentage of the value of my home.
For the lender, it can be either a direct loan or equity loan, whichever way they want to go.
Okay.
And the challenge, of course, is how do you get your money back? You know, and what happens if the person dies? And it can be either way. It could be the lender could pass away or the borrower. And so there's insurance both ways.
When you say insurance, you mean like a life insurance, or you mean like what do you mean by insurance?
It could be like a mortgage or like a life insurance. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But it's actually loan insurance. So the borrower can get loan insurance and the lender can get insurance as well. So both ways.
Both ways. So in the event that one person defaults, then the other person is not out of pocket. Is that the whole idea?
Yeah.
So then that gets insurance companies involved too. Because somebody has to, or some organization actually has to insure the investments.
Yes, if that's the choice. They may not want to. They may just say, I know who you are. I know your operation.
Yeah.
I've seen your financial statements, or I know who you are personally.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be important to them, but just in some cases would certainly be an advisory consideration for either the lender or the borrower.
Or either the lender or borrower. Okay, so then there are some sort of stipulations in terms of regulations and or I call them business rules that within a peer-to-peer lending environment that you would have to adhere to.
Yes, certainly. And even the whole matter of your payment history and your track record, there's another part that we haven't talked about, and that is social media credit. And there's a new system that's a part of this operation as well, and that is patented and has to do with credit assessment and credit granting.
Okay, you know what we'll do then? Because if we're going to talk about social media assessment, I think we'll hold that for the next segment. We'll take a short break right now. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Ben, president of Charter Management Group. Ben, just before the break, we've been talking about peer-to-peer lending and the whole concept behind it and how a new banking approach is sort of finding its way into Winnipeg. You mentioned about social media assessment as part of the whole process, and I just found that absolutely fascinating. What do you mean by social media assessment?
Well, you know, Richard, so far in our world, we've become so accustomed to the three-digit credit scores
Yes.
That have been around forever.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the banks use them, and everywhere you go.
Yeah, you get like a soft credit check or a hard credit check, and one impacts your credit rating, the other doesn't. Even in traditional financing or for investment purposes, one of the things you should do is check your credit rating on an annual basis. So to make
absolutely,
sure it's up there.
Yeah, true. And we're so hung up on those three digits that the time has come for change.
Okay. And so what is that change?
Suppose you were to go to the U.S. and start a new business. Do you know the first thing that would happen is you find you have no credit because your scores, your credit rating in the U.S. is non-existent. So the person that I'm that client that we've been talking about all this time came up with an idea, and he patented this idea. And that is a social media score, which is so current that if you start to do anything at all, any kind of transactions, credit, debit, financial, cash, whatever, it tracks all of that information, and you immediately begin to build credit. The FICO scores, the three digits ones we're talking about, if you had a bankruptcy, shall we say, 15 years ago, that still dogs you to this day. And so time has come for change. And so now, with the new credit scoring system, they may make some reference to the FICO scores, but you're that monkey's off your back if you had a bankruptcy, because you're no longer that guy. You're today a different person, and so therefore, it's a major break for people in a lot of cases, because here they have an opportunity to establish a new record, a brand new score, and it's current, and it's meaningful, and it is validated.
Why do they call it a social media score?
Because it uses social media to track your activities.
Okay, okay.
And so if you go to a store and you make a purchase or you sell something to somebody, either online or differently, it tracks your progress, your track record. And so as a result of it, you continually build and build and build credit.
So at the same token, though, I can't help but think that if you're not part of the, we'll call it social media, if you're not part of that environment, then it'd be very difficult for you to actually build a score.
Well, actually not, because I'll tell you why. You have friends,
yes,
and your friends will tell you about their knowledge of you. And so as a result of it, you still get the benefit of using social media. Social media doesn't mean that you have to belong to a certain link or a certain operation. And I'm, you know, so there's so
like
many around.
LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook, or what have you.
Yeah. Sure, that's part of it, but it's not essential.
Okay, and so that's an aspect to it. Be fascinating to find out a bit more about that. I can't help but think that, you know, this is a whole area, maybe I'll make reference here just in Canada, that the majority of people are not familiar with. So it sounds to me like there'd be a lot of education required in sort of to have people understand what peer-to-peer lending is.
Yes, and for that purpose, we have come up with to support these three operations that I mentioned to you.
What were the three operations?
Okay, one was the card.
Yeah.
The card system.
Yeah.
The second one is the peer-to-peer.
Yes.
And the third is the credit scoring system.
Okay, so
and
three
those are all
systems.
Yeah, they're all in the fintech world. If anybody talks to you about fintech, one of the investors said, you know, this thing is hotter than a pistol.
Yeah.
It is like, it is a thing to go, and if you want to make an investment, if you want to do something in the fintech sector, because that's where the action is. And this goes into blockchain and everything else now. It's just dynamite. It's huge.
It's becoming huge.
Very exciting.
So how do you take a country, a culture that's accustomed to doing business financially one way and bring them into this whole new arena?
That's where we have the Advisory Journal.
Okay.
And this is a publication of about 55 pages that's online as well as in print. And fortunately, there's a publisher around here that is willing to do this for us. So it'll be probably bi-monthly at first, but then thereafter, as far as the paper part is concerned, and thereafter, it'll be on a monthly basis. So that's about to launch. In fact, I have a picture right here. You can see
that
it looks like.
You can show me.
Yeah, I can show you.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And what your business is worth, it sort of says up here. So basically, a whole new way to sort of get into the whole banking area. I can't help but think, because I'm sort of big into the information technology stream, savvy in that space, so I start thinking about business intelligence and artificial intelligence, those kind of things. I'd have to think that BI, business intelligence, artificial intelligence is going to be a big part of this moving forward.
Oh, Richard, you've just tweaked my button.
Oh, really?
This is good. We are big into artificial. Here's how that started. As a recruiter, I saw Winnipeg didn't have artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And, you know, and I saw in the paper that Microsoft had paid the University of Toronto something, I think it was 15 or 12, maybe $15 million worth of product that they had going. So, well, how about Winnipeg? We didn't have anything. So I called the Toronto University and started recruiting because I saw all the names of the big guys there. And as I'm doing this, this call comes in and says, you know, Ben, I started, it's my client. He says, I started an artificial intelligence 7 years ago, and it's different than anything you've seen. So of course that captivated my attention. You know what the big difference is? Normally, like everything is deep mind now.
Yes.
And that means the computers think and the artificial intelligence thinks like your brain does as opposed to computer strategy. So the big difference is everything is machine learning.
Yeah.
Ours is operator learning. Do you know how that differs?
How does it differ?
First of all, if you were to go to machine learning, you have to understand how the machine works, and then you have to apply all these various disciplines to it and so on. This is different because it operates. It thinks like you do, so it follows you around and it becomes you. And people who use it say it's uncanny because, first of all, it remembers everything you say.
So it learns your habits.
It learns all your habits. It has personality.
Operationalized. Yeah.
It has like character. Your character.
Yeah.
And then it does so many things. Like it takes 1,000 calls all at one time, like simultaneously.
Okay.
And sorts through that for you. And where you go, it goes. And how you act, it acts. And how you think, it thinks.
Okay.
So it becomes like if in business, it would be like hiring somebody without having to pay for them because it's a machine. It works.
Because it's a machine there all the time. So and that links back into peer-to-peer lending. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you to find out more information, how would they go about doing that?
Well, Charter Management Group is around. You can find it, and I give you the email address for one.
Yeah, shoot.
And I can give you a phone number as well, which is 204-944-1400. And it's been there for 30 years. So 204-944-1400. And the business, the email address is repor.com. So Romeo, Echo, Papa, Oscar, Romeo, repor.com.
What a show we've been having. Ben, I've always enjoyed having chats with you. If you had a final thought for a listener, what would it be?
Well, you know, Richard, we haven't talked about psychometrics, but all of these things are also working with psychometrics. And I would say keep that in mind as you're moving along, because that's the solution you have.
Okay. So lots actually happening in the business world in terms of peer-to-peer, in terms of bringing artificial intelligence together, in terms of psychometrics and a lot of key things. Appreciate that. Ben, thank you for joining me today on my show. For the listeners, thank you for tuning in. Obviously, I'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, ideas for guests or programming, things that you'd like to talk about, subjects that are interest to you. And thank you for tuning in. But please do remember, by the way, you can send me a note at richard@setforsuccess.ca. So please do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.